I'm John Kroll. Today on No Limits, we're going to talk about one of the most divisive issues in America, immigration. Just days ago, President Barack Obama performed executive actions that would allow many undocumented immigrants to stay in the United States. Many Republicans reacted with anger, including here in Indiana. Governor Mike Pence has ordered Indiana to join a lawsuit that seeks to overturn the president's act. We'll talk about this hotly debated subject with immigration attorney Emma Mahern, Terry Morris Downs, executive director of the Immigrant Welcome Center, and June McCain, who served as the executive director of the Asian American Alliance for 6 years. Please join the conversation. Call 866-476-3881. Email is nolimits@wfyi.org. Facebook is nolimitswfyi. Twitter is wfyi. Now, this news.
No Limits is made possible by Apparatus, managing IT infrastructure so companies don't have to. It's advanced IT made simple. Learn more at apparatus.net.
Welcome to No Limits. I am John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of thestatehousefile.com, and your host. We are talking today about one of the more hotly debated subjects in American culture these days, immigration. If you would like to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. You can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi or on Twitter at wfyi. My guests are in the studio with me right now are immigration attorney Emma Mahern, who is with Gooden Abernathy, and returning to us is Terry Morris Downs, who's the executive director of the Immigrant Welcome Center. Welcome, both of you. It's good to have you here.
Thank you so much, John, for having us.
Certainly. And we should be joined shortly by June McCain, who has served as the executive director of the Asian American Alliance and now works as a freelance medical interpreter. Well, obviously, the thing that kind of kicked this into overdrive was the president's executive order from about a week and a half ago, I think. Probably ought to talk about, because there's a lot of loose chatter about what that was and what it wasn't, and the nomenclature, you know, the definitions have been kind of loose. So, Emma, I'm going to start with you. Tell me in legal terms precisely what the president's order did.
Absolutely. So, first of all, I think a lot of people have said, some people have confusion about whether this was a law, an order, or what exactly it was. Essentially, the president directed and the various parts of the government have responded, including the Secretary of the Department of Homeland Security, issuing guidance about how to enforce immigration laws and how to proceed in processing particular kinds of applications and other changes to the visa system.
And what is the practical effect of that?
The biggest practical effect, and I think probably the most controversial practical effect, is an expansion of a program known as deferred action to extend to parents of lawful permanent residents and citizens, and also an expansion of an already existing deferred action for childhood arrivals to include folks of any age who entered the United States before they were 16 years old. And for both of those programs, the folks have to have been in the country since January 1st, 2010.
So they have to have been here for more than 4 years then, right?
Right, yes.
Okay. Terry, can you talk to me a little bit about, A, how many people this involves and what difference it's likely to make in their lives?
Sure, John. Thank you for having me on the show today. Mm-hmm. It's estimated that nationally more than 4 million undocumented immigrants may be able to apply for this administrative action, as Emma said, either through DACA or DAPA. Locally, we really don't have too good a number on how many people may be applying. I've heard anywhere between 40,000 and 100,000 may be able to apply for help through this program.
And I apologize for interrupting, but when we say locally, are we talking about central Indiana or are we talking about the state in general?
We're talking about central Indiana.
Okay, so it could be much larger if you include the entire state.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sorry.
Yeah.
My apologies for interrupting.
Not at all. We at the Immigrant Welcome Center feel that this is a very compassionate response to many people who have been here in central Indiana for many years, 5 years or more. We feel like it will help the city in many different ways, mainly in being able to keep the families together. When we think about the families who faced deportation and the laws would now permit them to stay without fear of deportation, this will bring many people out of the shadows, and this will help them to raise their voice in being able to become more active participants in our community. We feel like it will increase public safety because of the number of people who have feared law enforcement in the past will now be more apt to be able to report crimes or report themselves as victims of crime. Of course, it will also increase national security, so that's good for our entire country. We look at the ways that it's going to improve the health of the city's economy by starting new businesses, by increasing wages, and just increase the vibrancy of all the local neighborhoods. We also want to think about how this action will also help highly skilled immigrants mm-hmm. who are here on specialized visas be able to stay and continue to work in the United States. So that's another one that's very positive for the national economy.
And we probably shouldn't go too much farther without saying there also has been a profound, you know, reaction of opposition to this, primarily at the congressional level. I mean, the Republicans, particularly in the U.S. House of Representatives, have threatened defunding. You know, there's even been some loose chatter about trying to strip Air Force One away from the president and other things like that in response to this. So there's a great deal of anger about it. And here in Indiana, Governor Mike Pence has directed the state to join a lawsuit that I think the state of Texas originated, right, to try to overturn the president's order. Emma, I realize as the lawyer in the room here, we're probably going to throw these. What would be, are there legal grounds for overturning the president's act? And if not, could you kind of explain what the legal principles are?
Absolutely. I don't pretend to be a constitutional law scholar, but there are several different documents that I can sort of refer people to if they have an interest in what's the constitutional basis or how is this possible for the president to take such actions on his own. The basis of these programs is prosecutorial discretion, and mm-hmm. so. In essential terms, the argument from folks who support the president's position is we have limited resources and a problem that is too big to solve with those resources. So it falls squarely within the executive's power to determine how we should distribute those resources. In the past week, there was a letter issued by 136 law professors and legal scholars outlining the history of the program of deferred action and also stating the legal basis for this. And in just also in the past few days, four previous general counsels or chief counsels for INS or now USCIS have signed on to that reasoning.
We are talking about immigration here on No Limits. If you'd like to join the conversation, you can do so by giving us a buzz at 866-476-3881. You can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. You can find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi or on Twitter at wfyi. And we've been joined now by June McCain, who served as the executive director of the Asian American Alliance for 6 years and now works as a freelance medical interpreter. Welcome to the program.
Thank you.
It's good to have you here. Are there, you know, most of the focus, and I would think this would be frustrating because all of you work at some level in the area of immigration. Almost all of the discussion about immigration in this country right now deals with that, the question of documentation, who's documented and who, mm-hmm. who isn't, when in mm-hmm. fact that's a relatively small slice of the actual immigrant experience here. Is that frustrating for you to deal with, June?
As far as we always focus on undocumented population. Yes and no. I think there's a sizable segment mm-hmm. of undocumented immigrants here. But if you try to go through the legitimate procedure to establish permanent residency here, it's an ordeal. Mm-hmm. And I can just sort of share my personal experience. I came here back in 85, and I went through labor certification mm-hmm. to establish permanent residency. And that's an ordeal. And you have to make sure that your skill sets and qualifications no one in a local areas or local residents will have. And your employer will have to sign off and try to support you, and you will have to go through a year of just rigorous interviewing and documentations to submit to INS back then. So for someone to go through that and everything was labeled as undocumented, mm-hmm. that's frustrating, yes.
And probably, Emma, I think I cut you off, but probably should talk about what legal arguments is the state of Texas trying to advance here and saying that you know, the president's order ought to be overturned, that it is unconstitutional?
You know, I haven't personally read the complaint in that case, but my understanding from media reports is that they're claiming that the president has exceeded his authority, and so it's a separation of powers problem under the Constitution. That's my understanding of their arguments.
So part of my job here is to simplify and probably in some cases oversimplify complicated concepts. On one side, the president is in effect arguing, like a local prosecutor would, that I have limited resources, so I am not going to throw all of those resources at prosecuting, say, jaywalking. I'm going to focus on other issues instead. And what the state of Texas is saying is that the president usurped legislative authority.
Absolutely. Yeah, that's a good summary of what's going on.
And what is the process from here? I mean, I'm assuming it has to go through some sort of trial court. I mean, will something like this be fast-tracked, or will the folks who are in the situation that Terry was talking about be left hanging even longer?
Well, as of right now, the president's executive actions are moving forward, and they will continue to move forward. I'm not sure what exactly is going to happen in this litigation that Texas has filed, but for now, nothing is stopping the executive branch from moving forward with their programs. We imagine that probably the rollout of DAPA and the expansion of DACA will be similar to the rollout for Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals in 2012, which is that the USCIS, what the part of immigration that's the services that receives applications, will roll out this process and folks will be able to start applying. So far, no signs that there's going to be a stop to that based on this litigation.
Terry, I'm going to start. It's a two-part thing. What was the reaction of the folks that you work with to the president's order? And then the second part of that is, obviously, now that it's gone into court and there's some uncertainty, you know, we'll talk about that. But let's start first with, you know, when the order came down, what was the response?
It was a very celebratory feeling that many people who have been contributing to our communities throughout Indiana as taxpayers, as entrepreneurs, as consumers will now feel that they have a place in the United States. I do want to point out, John, that the administrative action will not grant citizenship. It is not a pathway to citizenship. It is not even a pathway to lawful permanent residence in the United States. People who qualify for this administrative action will not be able to apply for instance, Affordable Care Act, other federal programs will still remain off limits. It simply gives them the right to work in the United States and relieves the fear of deportation.
We are talking about immigration here on No Limits. If you'd like to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. Send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at No Limits WFYI or on Twitter at WFYI. My guests are Emma Mahern, Terry Morris Downs, and June McCain. Please stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Krall, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of the StatehouseFile.com, and your host. We are talking about immigration, one of the hottest topics around right now. My guests are immigration attorney Emma Mahern, Terry Morris Downs, who's the executive director of the Immigrant Welcome Center, and June McCain, who has served as the executive director of the Asian American Alliance for 6 years and now works as a freelance medical interpreter. Just before we went to the break, Terry, you were talking about the response and the kind of relief that immigrants in this area felt, the people that you work with the president's order. Now that that's sort of been cast into at least some doubt again with litigation, I mean, I know Emma's made the case that probably the legal precedents are on the side of the order being upheld, but most lawyers will tell you, you never guarantee an outcome when it goes to court. What was the response when they found out that litigation was likely to follow this and that it would be called into question again?
Well, I felt like we were not going to focus on the politics, that we were going to focus on the people and the people who needed help. And so we have been working very, very closely with the Indiana chapter of the American Immigration Lawyers Association to be able to put together some information sessions. We have scheduled several throughout Indianapolis, the first of which was held on Tuesday. And we still feel like we need to move full steam ahead in being able to help understand what this might mean for undocumented families in Indianapolis. So we have several information sessions set up. You can find a list of those on our website at www.immigrantwelcomecenter.org and scroll down to Administrative Action Information Sessions. Click on that, and there's a full list of the current ones that we have scheduled. We're also helping to build a coalition of many immigrant and refugee serving organizations in Indianapolis to be able to look at providing free legal assistance when the time comes to be able to apply for the administrative action programs.
This is going to be a simple question, but I suspect it's one that's not really easy to answer, which is, what provokes all of the anger about this subject? I mean, particularly in a nation that is a nation of immigrants. You know, I remember when I was traveling in the Southwest a few years ago seeing a very clever T-shirt of some Native Americans, and the words beneath it said, "I agree we have an illegal immigration problem," at that point, which I thought was a clever way of making the case that a lot of the folks who are complaining it themselves at some point, at least their ancestors came from someplace else to get here. So what drives the high level of feeling about this subject? Emma, I'll start with you, but I'm going to give everybody a crack at that one.
I can't speculate on everybody's individual opinion, but in my experience in talking to people throughout the community, I think that there's a lot of misunderstanding about how immigration works, who immigrants are, why they come to this country, and then what their situation is after they arrive. Personally, my husband immigrated from Mexico when he was 15 years old. He came here as a legal permanent resident because his father was a U.S. citizen and had been able to obtain his status throughout time, originally having come as part of a bracero program after World War II to fill jobs that we didn't have folks to fill. That's a complex story, and most people don't understand all the details. When we first got married, people said, oh, great, so you're going to be able to fix his papers, right? But that comes from the fundamental misunderstanding that not all people from Mexico are undocumented immigrants. Mm-hmm. Not all immigrants are undocumented. Some folks, have been in this country for a very long time. There are some folks who maybe identify with their parents' country of origin who are native-born U.S. citizens, and a lot of people just kind of don't understand the topic because they haven't come in contact with it personally. I think that when people do come in contact with it personally and know people personally who are impacted by immigration issues, that they become more aware and come to understand and really sympathize with the struggles that individuals go through as they go through a legal process, but also just living in a new country, in a new place, and accommodating and learning all of the things that go along with that.
June, I saw you nodding your head most emphatically when Emma was saying that there's a misperception,
yes,
about why people come here, what the process is, mm-hmm, like and what their lives are like. I want to give you a chance to jump in on that.
Yeah, I really agree with Emma. There's a certain diversity among immigrants community, and there's a certain level of education. There's a lack of education in hosting community. I think immigration is all about accessing basic needs, education, healthcare, things like that they don't have. They would like to have a chance to gain those control. But on the other side, citizen has a concern. I guess I don't want to open up the can of worm here, but dreamers, mm-hmm, those who spend most of their life and going through high school age, and now they are ready to enter college. They do have an SAT, but they are not able to prove this is a legitimate document. Mm-hmm. So, but what are you going to do if you are citizens, and in order for you to, for the government to accommodate immigrant best and brightest to go to UCLA, you may have to say no to legitimate U.S. citizen students. Mm-hmm. So there's never a simple answer to anything. But what your original question, what angers me the most, mm-hmm, when I think about immigrants who will risk their life to come over here, mm-hmm, they are being separated from their own family. They are denied for some of the basic needs. But they risk all that and leave everything behind to come here. And I think when I think about those details, they would not leave the home country if their government would take care of people. Mm. And it seems like all the politics, we focus on how to embrace everybody else when their own home, they're not doing much. So that's what angers me the most.
We've gotten a Facebook comment question from a listener named Michael, and if you'd like to reach out to us by Facebook, you can do so at No Limits WFYI. Michael says, it's interesting to note that the Republicans like our governor, who claim to be nice Christians, are the ones filled with anger and animosity towards illegal immigrants, while their financial supporters are the ones who profit by employing undocumented workers at low wages with no benefits. What we really have in this country is a problem with illegal employers who exploit undocumented workers, people who would not immigrate to the U.S. legally or illegally if they could not find employment. Terry, I'm going to throw that one your way.
Wow.
Well, I think that cuts also, Michael, and I hope I'm being fair, but it also, I think, touches to some degree, what Emma was saying about the misperceptions, the fact that people come here to consume more than they contribute, and we need to talk a little bit about that as well. But let's start with Michael's point here first. Michael doesn't use the term, but the term that's often used here is wage theft. I mean, where you actually have undocumented workers who work for people often off the books for lower wages than the law would require, or for more hours than they're actually being paid for.
Yes, that is a pervasive issue throughout the United States with undocumented workers in the United States. As a matter of fact, Emma and I have been working for more than a year with the establishment of an Indianapolis Worker Justice Center to be able to address some of the needs, legal needs of people who are being unfairly treated by their employers. So this is another way that President Obama's administrative action will improve our communities and improve the lives of our residents by helping them to be able to be better advocates for themselves, by understanding that they do have legal rights in the United States and that they need to exercise those rights. So thank you, Michael, for making a very astute observation on how our society says we don't want them here, but then feels very free to be able to
exploit them. Emma, in that situation, what rights does an undocumented immigrant have?
Undocumented workers have many of the same rights as workers here in the United States. If they haven't been paid for work they've completed, oftentimes they have identical rights to those of a U.S. citizen or somebody who is an authorized immigrant. And each situation is different, but just because you're undocumented doesn't mean you don't deserve to be paid for the work that you completed. And I find often that I have conversations with folks who either they're an independent business owner and they can't get paid by somebody who thinks that they can get away with it and specifically says to them, well, I know your immigration status and I think that I can get away with not paying you. Or an employer who thinks not only that they could not pay the individual, but that they could engage in other types of abusive practices that would, you know, allow them to have maybe some business advantage over folks who are trying to do things the right way. It's definitely a problem, and especially for those folks who come here seeking economic opportunity because there's none in the places that they're from.
Isn't there, and I'll throw this out to all three of you, isn't there a concern, though, when I've interviewed undocumented immigrants before, their concern, obviously, and I think Terry has alluded to this, is engaging with the legal system in any way. They feel like creates some risk for them. Emma, you're the one who's nodding the head most emphatically, so I'll go back to you.
Absolutely. It's always a concern. And the firm I work at, we represent folks in workers' compensation cases, personal injury cases, unpaid wages. And that's always one of the questions. If our clients are not documented immigrants, that's always one of the major questions they have when they come to us. But for every person who gets legal help, I'm sure from my personal experience that there are many others who do not because they are simply afraid. Of course, that's compounded by the fact that even native-born citizen workers are often concerned about going and seeking out legal help when they have an employment problem because it's their livelihood. And so if you add to that you don't have the job mobility because it's going to be a lot more difficult to obtain another job since you don't have work authorization, it really compounds the problem.
We are talking about immigration here on No Limits. If you would like to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at No Limits WFYI or on Twitter at WFYI. Well, I want to drill down a little bit further on, I think, what Emma said about the misperceptions about really the whole range from A to Z of what the immigrant experience is, and specifically the undocumented immigrant experience. Let's start with the most common complaint we hear is that they come and they consume services Terry, you're already shaking your head, so I won't go any further than that. You go ahead and take a swing at that one.
Well, you know, perception and data are two different things, and the data support that immigrants are contributors and not takers. When you look at the many ways that they are paying their taxes through renting, through consumer sales tax, you know, through ITIN numbers for employment taxes, they are contributing to those same programs that all of us enjoy in the United States and here in Central Indiana. So, you know, the argument that immigrants are taking jobs is one that I hear pretty frequently. You know, there's not enough jobs going around for Americans, so why would we want to help someone from another country take one of these jobs? And the simple truth is that the data over and over again support that immigrants create jobs in the United States. So because they are very entrepreneurial, because they do have great innovative ideas and energy and want to be able to be very successful here, they'll take risks. They'll start businesses that employ Americans. So,
well, and that I remember we had Carlos May, who works in the mayor's office on the show a few weeks ago, was talking on this subject, and he cited, if I remember, a study down in Texas that demonstrated just in the realm of sort of taxation and use of government services that undocumented immigrants pay twice as much in taxes as they consume in government services, which I think supports Terry's point, but that there haven't been really conclusive studies on that. Emma, what are some of the other misperceptions?
Oh, man, there are a lot. I would say that primarily with undocumented immigrants, a big perception is that there's one kind of being undocumented. There are a lot of people who are in a variety of limbo statuses, folks who may be here and are in some kind of process, a family member's petitioning for them, and they're going through a legal process because of that. They have a defense to deportation that could lead to residency. They're in an asylum proceeding. It seems to me that a lot of native-born Americans think that, oh, there's people who are here legally and there's people who are here illegally, and there's like one line that you get in to go from illegal to legal. And that's just not how our system works fundamentally. There are a lot of people who are in a variety of types of statuses, and it's very complicated. And so it's much easier to just think there's one line and these people didn't get in it. But it's just not, it doesn't line up with the reality.
When we talk, could you give us an overview of what some of the different statuses are?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, essentially, there's a few ways to become an immigrant in this country, and then there's a whole lot of visas to come here temporarily. The main ways to come here as an immigrant are through family, and there's a variety of relationships that qualify, through employment, and we've had a little bit of a discussion about that already, for humanitarian purposes, like asylum. Mm-hmm. And those are the main blocks of how folks are able to come here legally. There's one other program called the Diversity Lottery, and that's the thing that's most similar to what I think Americans tend to think of, which is you can sign up if you're from a country where not a lot of people come to the United States from, and then you're put in a lottery, and maybe your number is going to get called up. I think people think that that's the way the whole system may work, or have some perception that there's a way to just hop in the line and eventually come here legally. But that's just not the case.
And they're not disturbed at some level that we grant citizenship based on a system of wagering rather than. I mean, if it's a lottery, if it's a random system, that would seem to be somewhat troubling.
It's not citizenship, but it's lawful permanent
residence. Lawful permanent residence. We are talking about immigration here on No Limits. If you would like to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at No Limits WFYI or on Twitter at WFYI. My guests are immigration attorney Emma Mahern, Terry Morris Downs, the executive director of the Immigrant Welcome Center, and June McCain, who is the executive director of the Asian American Alliance. I am John Kroll. You're listening to No Limits. Please stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of thestatehousefile.com, and your host. We're talking about immigration today on No Limits. My guests are immigration attorney Emma Mahern, who's with Gooden Abernathy, and Terry Morris Downs, who's the executive director of the Immigrant Welcome Center, and June McCain, who serves as the executive director of the Asian, who served as the executive director of the Asian American Alliance for 6 years and now works as a freelance medical interpreter. Well, we were talking just before the break, obviously, about some of the misperceptions. One of the misperceptions also is where undocumented immigrants come from, too. I mean, the perception out there is that this is exclusively a North-South problem, that they come from Mexico and Central and South America. Terry, you're nodding your head most emphatically now, mm-hmm. So I'm going to throw this one your way.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. We are constantly trying to educate people on the fact that undocumented immigrants come from all over the world. It's estimated in the United States that more than 40% of the undocumented immigrants here in the United States right now came in with lawful paperwork and have overstayed visas. They came in through airports, not through crossing a border in the middle of the night, but through airports, and came in on visitor's visas, came in on student visas, have been here and want to stay, and then the visa expires and they're still here. So we like to remind people that this is not necessarily a border issue, that this is something that really indicates how broken our immigration laws and our immigration system have become, and that this is something that affects all immigrant populations from all over the world.
We are talking about immigration here on No Limits. You can join the conversation by calling us at 866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at No Limits WFYI or on Twitter at WFYI. Johan, welcome to the program.
Hi, how are you doing?
Doing fine. How about you?
I'm doing good. Thank you very much.
Certainly. What's on your mind?
I think it is a great thing that the president did an executive order for the immigration. The system is obviously broken. And if, Washington didn't seem to, get anything together that would work for real, besides just, a bunch of promises. And it didn't really affect me, but, it affects people I know. And I think it's just, it was a paramount, importance that they did that to help keep families together, help give families a chance of, growing in this country. And also, it's just very good. It made me very happy. I have no problem with it at all.
Well, thanks very much for the call and the comment.
You're welcome. Have a good one.
You too. Take care. Well, we should point out, though, and I think everybody's alluded to the fact that the president's order, even before the litigation, is really, sort of a stopgap. It's not a path to citizenship. It's not amnesty. It is not a whole list of things that there are perceptions about. So I think there's been a consensus, everyone here, that the immigration system is broken. What should we do to fix it? June, I'm going to start with you.
Well, first I would think president in his administration needs to explain this is not a pathway or a waiver that you will be granted for citizenship. When I talk to my neighbors and friends, that's what they think. Mm-hmm. You will skip all the middle process and you will gain citizenship, or either that or permanent residency. So that has to be some sort of education. Mm-hmm. Maybe you need to televise more often. That's first. And those who are here, I think it is time for them to receive or obtain a work permit. Mm-hmm. With the expiration, maybe, then you would take it to the next level.
Emma, a larger perspective, I mean, in terms of not just the president's order, but with the immigration system, what should we be doing now to fix it so that we don't have as big a problem?
All right. If I was in charge of the world, what would I do, I guess? I mean, it's hard
to
answer that question.
Legislative process, you
right.
get to be dictator for
I'm
just this one
I'm going to take over
issue.
The system and make yeah. the new rules. I mean, I think that there are important policy choices to be made in immigration. And I think everybody around the table, other than maybe those who are using it politically in the media, agree that there are substantial problems. One is our system is based on something we set up in the 60s, and that just doesn't relate to our employment needs in this country. Another thing is, people aren't having as many children as they used to, and our workforce is changing, and so we need to replace those workers with young people, and immigrants are a great group of people who usually come here when they're younger. So we need to find ways to open up our system and allow people to come here and fill those needs for our economy. When people talk about those changes, they're like, oh, yeah, for the people who are waiting and they're going to do it the right way. But for folks who are here, we can't do anything. And I think that that's a real mistake. Any changes we have moving forward need to provide a path to citizenship for folks who have been in our country and have been here contributing and who really one of the primary reasons that they're here without documentation is because there wasn't a way for them to be able to do it the right way. And more than anything, they want to do it the right way.
Well, I mean, this question, I'm trying to think how I want to frame it. But isn't it, given the fact that I think all of you have explained our whole, the legal structure governing our immigration practices, incredibly complex, even to people who live here in this country, have grown up within our system of government, is it not asking a bit much that people from another country are going to be able to understand what the right way is if we can't even explain it ourselves, Terry?
You know, I have been asked many times in my years with the Immigrant Welcome Center, why can't they do it the legal way? Mm-hmm. You know, why can't they wait in line? My grandparents, my great grandparents came here legally. Mm-hmm. So shouldn't they also do the same mm-hmm. thing? Well, let's remember that when the Industrial Revolution was going on and we were looking for workers in America from all over the world, all you had to do is get your boat ride over to the United States, sign in at Ellis Island, and you're good. And it's not
and
like
often
that.
They'd give you a different name than which, yeah, but whole nother story.
So immigration is far, far more complex today than it was back then. So, you know, the argument that, gee, my great grandparents did it legally and so should they just really doesn't hold water.
We are talking about immigration here on No Limits. If you'd like to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. Luke, welcome to the program.
Hey, love the show. I just wanted to say real quick, when I was 13, I went to China, right? And I was supposed to stay there for a year with my sister. And it's crazy because I only had a visa there for 6 months, but we thought it was for a year. And within that year, I traveled all through China. I went through Beijing and Shanghai and I went all over the place. And then it was crazy because it wasn't until I got to Beijing and tried to come back to America and they said, oh, your visa is expired. You can't leave the country now. And I think it's crazy because it's like I'm an American citizen. And for a little bit, I was an undocumented immigrant for a minute. I just think it's funny because then it's like it happens in other countries and it just people don't realize how easy like visas expire, you know?
Luke, don't leave us hanging here. How did you make it back into the country?
Oh, okay. Yeah, sorry. My sister, luckily, my sister been there for 3 years, and she knew tons of people. And she knew someone high up who worked for the airport or someone. And they got, you know, of course, we had to pay a fee, you know, probably something under the table, you know. But so we paid, and then, like, I think I had, like, a 10-day visa or something like that, you know. And then I had to, because I lived in Dalian, so I had to go to Dalian to Beijing just to go. And then in Beijing, I found out I couldn't leave. Then I had to go back to Dalian all the way back to Beijing.
Thanks very much for the call and for sharing your story, yeah. Luke. Thanks. But that raises a question also. Are there other countries in the world that are tying themselves into similar knots over immigration as we are? Emma, you're nodding your head.
Yes, absolutely. Immigration is a big issue for a lot of countries in Europe, in Africa. It's not just like only the United States is receiving immigrants. There are people moving all over the world in all sorts of different ways. And there's also a lot of migration between countries that we don't think of as main receiving countries based on their economies. And all of those countries deal with it in different ways, some of which are more humane and some of which are less humane. A big thing that was in the news is that the Dominican Republic, I believe it was last year, revoked citizenship to people who were of Haitian origins who'd been born in their country. And that was a big issue. And that's something that politically has come up here in the United States, to not grant citizenship to folks who were born here or to go back and retroactively take
strip
it away.
Citizenship away.
That's just not a humane solution. So it's not just the United States that's dealing with these issues.
We are talking about immigration here on No Limits. If you'd like to join the conversation, give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. Bob, welcome to the program.
Thank you. I'm still not convinced about the broken part. Aren't there a lot of existing laws that we don't even enforce? And wouldn't we just try to layer more laws on top that we'd never get enforced if we did more? And, go ahead.
Could you give me an example of what you're talking about?
Well, just the idea. People say the immigration system is broken. Okay. 1, 2, 3. What are the reasons why it's broken? You know, what laws don't we have that we need? You know, and it just seems like it's against the law to hire somebody who's not a citizen, right?
No.
No, it's not.
And yet nobody gets punished for that.
Okay, we'll try to get answers to your questions here, Bob. Thanks very much for the call.
Thank you.
Okay, so that first one, the question that because I think probably in the back and forth, audience may have lost the answer. Is it illegal to hire someone who is not a citizen? We'll go to the lawyer.
No, absolutely not. First of all, there are a lot of folks who are work authorized who are immigrants. He's probably referring to the fact that there are a lot of folks who are not work authorized who maybe are being employed right now. And that does go contrary to certain laws here in the United States. Certainly you don't have to be a citizen to work in the United States.
Okay. We've gotten a couple of emails in a hurry that actually sort of, without intending to, I think, argue with each other. First one says a few things. She just said it is government's job to take care of the people. I disagree. It is a person's job to take care themselves, to get a job, live within your means, and be a good citizen. Second, we had many exchange students. They all assimilated and knew and learned English. One of them stayed on, and the sacrifice of not returning to Colombia for 7 years because they would not let her return. The point is, if you want to move here, great. You should do it legally. Like the LAW says, if you do not, it is therefore illegal. Yet our country does nothing to deter them. This angers most. If immigrants want to come, terrific. They need to learn English. Not give up their culture and language, but assimilate. This is what ticks everyone off. And then there's an email from a listener named Don who says, I've known three families working through the system for legal residence. It was extremely hard, costly, and emotional. Some judges grant asylum to 80%, others 20%. After over 100K, one family returned to South Africa. This makes illegal immigration look very attractive. What I really want to say is that the 11 million plus illegals are here because we allowed it to happen. Let's swallow our pride and help this who took advantage of our lax attitude toward enforcing the laws. a lot there. And that question of assimilation is also one that, Terry, I'm sure you confront all the time.
Mm-hmm. We do. And especially the English and the language barriers. I just would like to say to your audience today, John, that immigrants are trying to learn English, and that we have been able to connect many, many residents in Indianapolis to free or low-cost English classes so that they can learn. But it takes many, many years before someone is comfortable in a second language. So it just takes patience, just as it does has with our ancestors and all the other immigrants coming to the United States. It just takes a little time to learn English, and they are learning it.
We are talking about immigration here on No Limits. Mohammed, welcome to the program.
Yeah, thank you for taking my call. My name is Mohammed Ali. I'm from Sudan, Darfur region. I came to the United States in 2006 by student visa, and I applied to asylum because of Sudan genocide in my region or my country, and it still is continuing the genocide in Sudan. My question is, I'm legal in the United States to get work authorization to work, and I pay in tax, and I get a good record, and I don't have any criminal. I never been in jail. But my case in the hold since 2006. Every 2 years they give me like new hearing day, but it's still my case in process. So my question is, there, Mr. Obama is comprehensive immigration reform. That is going to be including me, like somebody like me, my case in the hold, or just for the people who are, what I'm going to say, who are on illegal come to United States. So no way to go back to my country. I miss my family. I want to see my family. I want to see my wife. But no way to go back to my country. So this reform is going to be including me or not?
We'll try to get an answer for you. Thanks very much for the call, Mohammed. Emma.
Without getting too much into the specifics of Mohammed's situation, because, Mohammed, I'm not familiar with the details of your case, I can say that if the delay, you know, you mentioned in immigration court, it takes a long time in immigration court. And, yes, there can be several dates in immigration court, and it can take years and years to have a case adjudicated because of the backlogs. One of the parts of the executive action is that there are going to be forthcoming some immigration court reforms. We aren't sure what those are going to be. Also, the executive has said that they're going to change some enforcement priorities to hopefully close some cases for folks who really don't need to be in immigration court proceedings, which should hopefully help speed up the process for folks who have cases that do need to be adjudicated, like valid asylum claims.
You know, I feel like we've got a lot more to talk about, but sadly we have run out of time. I would like to thank my guests, Emma Mahern, Terry Morris Downs, and June McCain. I feel like we could have talked for at least another hour. I'd like to thank all of our listeners, too, and invite those listeners to continue this conversation on Facebook and on Twitter. I am John Kroll. You've been listening to No Limits. Thank you for joining us.
No Limits is a production of 90.1 WFYI Public Radio, Indianapolis. Executive producer, Michelle Johnson. Producer, Shannon Cagle. Interactive media coordinator, Melissa Davis. Technical producers, Cedric Freeman and Chris Flood. And board engineer, Joe Hatcher. Abby Terzini screens our calls. No Limits is made available through IPBS, Indiana's public broadcasting stations.